Welcome to the Fan pregame brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. Our show begins now. Alvin Williams in about 10 minutes ahead of a big one, Raptors and the Celtics on Sportsnet 1 at 7:30 at Scotiabank Arena. Shayna Goldman in about half an hour to tee up our big game on the network, Edmonton and Minnesota on Sportsnet at 8:30. Lots going on. Two big matchups in our world tonight.
Yeah, and I think with the Raptors, I don't know if they're like the most notable games, but notable games so far versus the Celtics, having lost on that that buzzer beater from Jason Tatum in the first, a really competitive game, and then the doors promptly blown off the Raptors in the second matchup with the Celtics. So we'll see if it normalizes just a little bit, or is if it's as notable as the previous two meetings have been.
Yeah, like the both ends of the spectrum in terms of losses. Not sure they were both ethical. The one was the franchise.
One encouraging, one very discouraging.
The franchise worst loss. That was New Year's Eve, which was kind of, you know, deflating. The ball did drop on the Raptors. 54-point loss on New Year's Eve. And then, as you mentioned it, overtime buzzer beater where Jakob Poeltl had 35 points. RJ Barrett had a triple-double. And they had no Scotty and no IQ. And they pushed it to the final seconds there. So maybe they'll meet in the middle tonight. The line is 14.5.
It's probably very likely that they could meet in the middle tonight. I think you could middle this one if you're a Raptors better.
Okay, we got a couple Blue Jays related things to go through. Do you want to start Blue Jays?
Sure.
Okay. Well, hold on tight. Okay, so Roky Sasaki can officially sign now.
International signing period is open.
But the Blue Jays are on the East Coast, and the other teams are on the West Coast. So did we get, like, a three-hour advantage?
I'm not really sure how that works. Probably, like,
he hasn't signed yet.
You know, when there's a trade deadline, I don't know if teams on the West Coast get the extra 3 hours.
Well, we should have been able to get it.
But we might need it.
We might need it.
The Toronto Blue Jays might need it, given what they're up against in the Padres and Dodgers. But, again, final three, Sasaki, the next week, will actually figure out where he's going to go. And like it has been for the last couple off seasons and with these big free agents that the Blue Jays are chasing, like it feels like a lot too much hinges on the success of this negotiation period. Like you can buy into, hey, we got this basically like this draft pick who could be an all-star right away, this potential prodigy from Japan who's going to step right in and be potentially dominant, and you don't have to pay him anything. It's beneficial on multiple fronts. And yeah, you could build around that in a pretty good rotation and a supplemented bullpen and two young guys still in Vladdy and Bo who have a lot to prove this year. Like you can really twist yourself into believing there's something if Sasaki comes, but if they don't get him, and then you look at the next story we're going to get to in Vladimir Guerrero Jr., like more questions and more probably negativity over the direction of the Toronto Blue Jays.
Okay, the next story we're going to get to does revolve around Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and per Hector Gomez and Mike Rodriguez reporting that the Mets are pushing hard to sign or put together a trade package for Vladdy. This kind of came out of the blue. I don't know if it's like, hey, you know, vultures circling around the Rogers Center, picking at the carcasses.
A little cold for vultures, I think. But
they'll find anything for a little fresh meat. They'll brave whatever temperature. But putting together a trade package for Vlad and pushing hard for Vlad, the New York Mets. So I looked at the Mets roster. There's a couple guys I'd like. Juan Soto.
Mm-hmm.
Ever heard of him? But no, in all realness, I think this is probably a bit of an unsettling thing to come across. Obviously, as Blue Jays fans are kind of wondering, hey, maybe Roky Sasaki wants to sign here, or maybe you lose Vladimir Guerrero Jr. in a trade.
Yeah, definitely. The flip side of that potentially is, or devil's advocate may be, okay, so maybe it's just not going to work. Maybe Mark Shapiro, in his refusal to call Vladdy anything close to generational, they have made up their minds and they don't want to give him $500+ million at the end of the day. It could be a lifeline in that, okay, we have no leverage, we being the Toronto Blue Jays, and all of a sudden we've got a team who really, really wants Vladdy, not next winter, but this winter right now, and could pay an exorbitant price in order to get him right now. Like, that's the thing that bothers me the most about the Blue Jays and the handling of Vlad. It's like, we don't even know if they covet Vlad. We don't even know if they really, really want him to be around. Does it hinge on signing a right-hander from Japan? Like, you don't even know. You can't connect these dots perfectly. But if they've made their mind up about Vlad and they don't actually want to have this, like, liquidation sale where they're like, hey, yeah, Vladdy's available because the optics aren't great, if the Mets just decide, no, we want this guy and we're going to do anything to get him, then there might be like the easy way out. The back door could be open in this regard.
Oh boy. We'll stay tuned on all things Blue Jays related and trade scenarios or signings. But let's shift over to the Raptors. As we mentioned, they got a big one against the Celtics on Sportsnet 1 in about an hour and a half. And we're, you know, parsing through what this means for the Raptors. And I think the biggest storyline as of late has been Chris Boucher, who's been, you know, a guy that's kind of gone up and down in this roster. He's been relied upon at times, and then he's been just on the bench. And over the past four games, he's put together a resume of four games that is pretty unbelievable. 10 points in 4 minutes played in New York. 23 points on 4-for-5 field goal percentage, sorry, in Detroit. He played 20 minutes. 23 points in Cleveland, and 18 points against Golden State, and 17 of those points were in the fourth quarter. So he hasn't played a lot of minutes, but when he is on the floor, he's unbelievable. He's averaging 16.3 points and a 95% true shooting percentage in the last four games. This is not normal numbers for anyone, really, shooting 75% from the field and 70% from three. This is Chris Boucher over the past four games. Obviously, Chris Boucher has been in discussion when it comes to a trade piece, and he's, whether that's incentive or not, been playing pretty unbelievable.
It feels like the most obvious example of a showcase thing. Like, they've caught a wave here and they're really riding it with Chris Boucher. I don't know, through this like little stretch, I don't know if we're seeing like the most overt example of their tanking or just like a real serious general oversight on the part of Darko Rajakovic, because if it is the overt tanking thing, it's like, okay, we want to trade this asset. He's suddenly given us something, so let's let him do all that he can with that and potentially pump up his value. But if he just had this capability to be a bench player that is of impact, it just feels like, okay, where was this? Where was the usage of Chris Boucher? And I get the development thing and giving guys a chance, but again, that would be part of tanking if a guy who could give you some real punch in these small spurts has not been given any opportunity or less opportunity than maybe he deserves, then maybe we finally see through this the inability or the unwillingness to put the best foot forward. I really do think they're trying to put him out there as much as possible right now because of the deadline and what he could potentially give to a team. I think he could be a pretty serious, not serious, but like an energy guy off the bench for a team that needs that. There are a lot of teams around basketball that could use that, but I'm not really sure how we got to this point where it seems, aside from the last four games, it's been unbelievably frustrating for a guy like Chris Boucher, who deserves to at least have the organization do right by him this year, whether that's playing him or making sure he can play elsewhere.
And the interesting thing about Chris Boucher is that he's going to be a free agent this summer. He just turned 32 a few days ago. Obviously, he's Canadian. He's the last piece of this championship roster left, which is kind of shocking to say because it hasn't been that long, but every other piece is gone. So he's the last, like, piece of the puzzle, I guess, that made this thing work. And obviously the Raptors aren't in a championship window right now. And you could trade him for something at the deadline. What something is still is to be determined. Is that a second-round pick, a first-round pick? Is it a massive package? Like, obviously, if someone is willing to give you the bag for Chris Boucher, you take it. But Chris Boucher is barely getting a lot of playing time on the Toronto Raptors, who are at the very bottom of the standings. Or B, you let him go into free agency and see what that looks like in the offseason. I don't know what's best right now. There's still a little bit of time. But you're right. It's a bit of an interesting, I guess, catch-22 when you're not playing him. The team is still losing. But when he plays, he's like a vibrant piece, and he's doing so well, and he's adding this trade value that goes up every time he has an incredible game. So how Darko chooses to use Chris Boucher moving forward will be really interesting. Must be difficult for a guy. Like, I'm just trying to put myself in Chris Boucher's shoes for a second. Like, when I'm out there, I'm the best player on the Raptors, but I'm only out there for 20 minutes, 21 minutes, and I go hard, and I get 17 points in the fourth quarter against Golden State, and we win. So, you know, how do you know what your spot is? I think that's something we'll ask Alvin when we bring him here. But there's a couple pathways this could go, but I think there's a little sentimental piece of him being the last piece of the championship roster that you're like, well, you know, he's a Canadian guy. Like, maybe they can work something out. But the trade deadline, you might have to make hard decisions, and that might be one of them.
And this might just be exclusively a player thing, too. Like I mentioned, you know, Darko's role in whether he's using or not using Chris Boucher and what he might be leaving on the table from a day-to-day or game-to-game perspective. But Boucher might know this little window, this little spurt he has where he's actually receiving meaningful minutes after his 4 minutes produced 10 points in New York 4 games ago. It could be that I got to get out of here and
I gotta
this is my chance.
Leave it out there.
If I'm going to play NBA basketball this year or get a contract this summer, I've got to play well in these minutes because I know how important it is to showcase myself ahead of the deadline. And when teams are non-competitive, personal and individual wants and needs and ambitions come to the fore. We talked about that with the Blue Jays, how like all the young guys are performing well, but they're doing so in a way where it doesn't really benefit the team. In this case, it's the veteran who has this opportunity to potentially play himself out of Toronto, get himself onto a team where he can continue to showcase in front of a larger audience and then maybe get another contract this summer and continue what has been an improbable, I would say, NBA story. For Chris Boucher.
Yeah, when we mentioned it, they're playing the Celtics tonight. And just a quick note on the Celtics before we bring in Alvin Williams. Like, there was a point where we were adding Celtics to every parlay. You know, they're going to win the East. They're going to win the NBA championship. But they're 6 games back of the Cavs now. I think that kind of happened pretty quick. I mean, the Cavs went on that incredible win streak. But the Celtics aren't really a shoe-in anymore. I don't know if it's a bit of fatigue that we've seen or some a tough schedule or showing some cracks. But the Cavs have been hot. The Knicks are right behind the Celtics in the standings race. So at least between those three, we're going to have a really good race down the stretch.
Yeah, we're going to do Betano Best Bets next week on NBA futures. And I think the Celtics part of this is interesting when forecasting the future because the NBA playoffs doesn't work like the NHL where we got these little divisions and a wild card and you play each other and you get the same matchups every single year. It is 1 through 8, but in a bracket style. So if you come first, you don't have to play 2 or 3 until the Eastern Conference final, the way that that sets up. And right now, number 1 is Cleveland and they would be avoiding number 2, Boston, number 3, New York. And I'm not really sure it's going to change from that given how these teams have played and the distance at least between Cleveland and the other two. So it behooves clearly Cleveland to get the number 1 seed, and it makes sure that Boston has to go through New York before even getting to Cleveland, which will make things more difficult on the Celtics getting back and trying to repeat as NBA champions.
All right, let's bring in Alvin Williams to help us tee it up tonight of Sportsnet. Of course, they got the Celtics and the Raptors on Sportsnet 1 at 7:30. Alvin, how are you? Thanks for coming on.
Good. Thanks for having me.
Of course. We have lots to go through with this Raptors team. Let's start with the matchup tonight because Justin and I were reminiscing on the last time this team played each other. Franchise worst loss, 74. That would have been horrible. 54 points on New Year's Eve. But then a couple games before that, they played, and it was a really close game for the Raptors. There was a triple-double by RJ. Jakob Poeltl scored 35 points. It went to overtime, and it was Tatum with the buzzer beater. So are we, you know, maybe we can meet in the middle tonight? Like, two ends of the spectrum. What do you expect for tonight when the Raptors face the Celtics?
I'm not sure what to expect, but, you know, the second game, the Celtics did a much better job of paying attention to Jakob Poeltl. Jakob Poeltl had a huge game, and I think that was their strategy, allow him to have one-on-one opportunities and, you know, not really focus on stopping him. And then the second game, the first game, that was their strategy. The second game, they packed the paint in, and they really didn't allow the Raptors to get in the paint, didn't allow so many things to happen, which forced the Raptors to shoot outside shots, which we saw the score differential. So the Raptors only had 12 points in that first quarter. So they made some great adjustments. But this Boston team, they're up and down right now. They're not shooting the ball as well. They're having some struggles right now, but they're still a very, very talented team. They're becoming more and more healthy. So we'll see what happens tonight. But I think as long as the Raptors, they put that output effort-wise that they had against Golden State Warriors in these past couple games, then they'll always give themselves a chance to be involved in the game or be a part of the game and not any of those blowouts that we saw on New Year's Eve.
So we knew it wasn't going to be a title-winning season for the Toronto Raptors. We were expecting some pain. Maybe we didn't expect it would be this bad in terms of wins and losses, but they did get a victory over Golden State, a high-profile opponent, the other night. In a season like this where the expectations are low, the odd win, how important is that for this Toronto Raptors team?
I mean, for the players in itself, they're not wrapped up with the narrative of the direction the team, if it's rebuilding, whatever. As a player, you're trying to win. You're trying to win. You're trying to go out there every game. As a coach, you're trying to win. And it's big. any win that you can get, especially the house was packed. You know, mm-hmm. Steph Curry was in town. There was a lot of energy. There was a lot of Steph fans there. And for the Raptors to come out and put that output and that energy and that focus and play the type of game that they played, it was big. It was huge. And to let them know that I think they can build off of that. And they continue to build off of that. And I think individually, you can look at performances and you can see that. But for collectively, that's something that the Raptors should and they should be able to build off of, because that was a huge win. And it was a much needed win. And that's where you can go forward from there.
How do you know all those fans weren't there to see Chris Boucher and his stretch of performances? Because it's been unbelievable. He's got 75% from the field, 70% from three over the last four games, and a 96 true shooting percentage, averaging around 17 points. And not doing it in a full game, doing it in small sample sizes, 10 points in 4 minutes in New York. It's just been pretty unbelievable to see what's gotten into Chris Boucher. Is it a little bit of a showcase opportunity for him? Is it a, hey, I'm going to prove to you, Darko, that I should be out on the court a little bit more? What's changed for Chris Boucher?
Well, the fans the other night, they definitely didn't come to see Chris Boucher. They came to see Steph Curry. But they saw Chris Boucher. And that's what I really enjoy, when you get your opportunity, when big stages. And, you know, you're looking at Steph Curry, you're looking at the other superstars. But Chris Boucher, he's opening eyes. And to me, I've always been a fan of Chris. And I like to take out the shot making. Of course, this is the NBA and they always talk about shots as a make or miss lead, but he does the other things. He plays with energy. He had some phenomenal block shots. He played good defense. He had a great putback in the right time of the game. And then the shot making is just a plus. When, unfortunately, in this game, and you talk about Chris Boucher, if he takes those shots and he's not making them, then people are killing him. But they're still forgetting about the other things that Chris Boucher brings. He brings professionalism. Whenever his number is called, whether he's not playing for a couple of weeks and then he gets in their lineup and he does what he's doing now. So I've always looked at that. I've always appreciated that. But then you take the shot making, you take the ability of what he's doing. It's phenomenal. It's great to see him have this type of output. It's great to see him have being this type of rhythm, because every player, every athlete knows when you get in that rhythm, it's nothing. It's not a better feeling. So it's well deserved. He's put the work in, and hopefully he continue to get that same those same opportunities, whether those shots go in or whether they miss, because he still brings a big piece and a big advantage to this Raptors team from his effort alone.
I hate to tie it into the trade deadline, but you know the way that he's been playing, it's, I think it's pretty noticeable that he could be a hot trade chip when the Raptors do approach the trade deadline. I think he could bring something to another team. I don't know how much he'd be able to play on a really deep team with title contentions, but do you see Chris Boucher maybe bringing his services elsewhere with that professionalism, with that energy that he does bring, and maybe helping another team thrive?
No, I think he definitely, and that's a good thing. And a lot of us frown our faces upon getting traded or the idea of being traded, but I've always been under the impression that that means somebody else wants you, right? And that's a good thing with this league, with 30 teams in the league, and you always, when you go out there, you're auditioning for those other 29 teams. Whether it's here in Toronto or it's another team, he brings what teams need. He brings length, he brings the size, he brings the versatility, he brings that energy, and again, professionalism. So if you, a luxury for a coach is, if you do not play a guy, you don't want to lose that guy because he's not playing. Chris Boucher has showed over time that you're not going to lose him. He's still going to be a part of the locker room. He's still going to be part of the culture. He's going to get in the game and play his style. So the coach will have confidence, and the coach will be reassured that he's always going to get this effort or this type of performance from a Chris Boucher. And like, again, not the 15 points in 13 seconds and stuff like that, phenomenal numbers that he's putting up, but he's going to be that type of player. So it depends. And I think he would be a good fit for any other team in the NBA, because those services are definitely needed.
We're chatting with Alvin Williams to be on the call. Sportsnet 1 tonight, Toronto and the Boston Celtics. No Emmanuel Quickley again. Alvin, how difficult is it? I don't know if you've ever been in a position quite like this, but the up and down, stop and start nature of Emmanuel Quickley's season. How concerned are you about, you know, just a season of potentially lost development?
It's difficult, but you always look at the other side of it. You know, every athlete, you're going to have to go through injury. It's going to test them mentally. It's going to allow other people to get opportunities. I think you're seeing Jamal Shedd come to light, right? He's getting his opportunities. You see Davion Mitchell get opportunities. But again, you definitely want IQ part of this lineup because he's a part of the movement that the Raptors are trying to make for the future. And if you don't have him in a lineup with all the other pieces, you'll never really get a true sample size or a true understanding of what the team actually have. So you need him back in a lineup. You need him healthy. But again, you can take something away from this because this is part of the journey. And as a Raptor, as a pro athlete, as a human being, you got to go with the downs and ups and downs to make yourself complete. So hopefully you can take that from it, but hopefully you can get healthy enough where the Raptors can get a great sample size of those lineups and those guys playing together.
Speaking of sample sizes, Scotty Barnes had a great opportunity to be working on a shot that Darko is saying he's put a lot of effort into that post-up shot. He's been very efficient. Darko's saying he's putting a lot of work into it, a lot of high-level players. They need to have that shot, and I think he can get to the sweet spot on the court and get that shot. He's ranking second in league efficiency league-wide on the post-up shot. What Scotty Barnes, is that like the goal for him to just find areas where he can produce, where he can feel confident this season and work on becoming a scorer that the Raptors can rely on?
No, for sure. That's the next step for Scotty. I think the challenge for Scotty is he does so many things really well. He's a great ball handler. He's a great passer. So offensively, sometimes you can get caught in the mix of trying to do too many things and not really honing in on one thing. But I think the next phase for Scotty is really identifying where his offense scoring-wise can come from because he has the goods and he has the ability that a lot of players don't have, that passing ability and that feel, especially at a young age that he's at. So he needs to continue working on whatever, if it's the turnaround jump shot, if it's that mid-post area, or just getting into the paint and being very effective in that area. And it's not just going to be on Scotty. It's the coaching staff. It's his teammates helping him to get in those best positions so he can maximize his ability. But he's going to have to put that work in himself first and foremost. And I think once he doubled down on some of those things, right, get a one move or one signature thing that he can do to go to, and then you start creating counters, and then you start creating plan B. So now you keep the defense off balance. But again, doing that and then mixing in his natural skill set from the passing ability, that's what's going to make him even more dangerous. So I agree 100%. Finding that one signature move or that go-to move and really doubling down on it and become unstoppable with it until they try to stop it, and then you make those adjustments. And he did a good job against Golden State, posting up, and Golden State tried to go to a zone. They tried to call timeouts, but Scotty really doubled down on it and really was effective with the Raptors' offense in this position.
Alvin, how much did the Celtics pique your interest? I mean, I don't think we're this far down the road, but I think I'm wondering if we're learning how difficult it is to stay on top for a long time, given what we've seen from the Celtics this year. It may just be that Cleveland has taken over in terms of a regular season start standpoint this year. But I do think watching the Celtics, not as a lot, but in what I have seen from the Celtics, they look slightly diminished. Maybe Jrue Holiday slightly diminished. Do you think they're still the same team that can get back to an NBA final? Or are you seeing some of the cracks that I may be picking up on?
It's hard, right? Because you have some teams, you win a championship, you come into this season, and you're a little complacent. And you think you know what it takes to get through the regular season. You know, we want to finish with home court advantage or whatever the case may be, whatever those goals are. Because postseason is a totally different season. But you look at some of the players, hopefully they can get to the postseason healthy. And they have the talent. I mean, you got two studs in Jaylen Brown, and you got Jason Tatum. But then you have all those other pieces, Derek White and Holiday and Porzingis. Those guys are great defensive players. So they're great role players. So they have definitely what it takes. But mentally, sometimes you get exhausted. Sometimes emotionally you get exhausted. So it depends if they can withstand those parts of the season. Talking to one of the coaches, he said now they have to get used to taking everyone's best, right? Boston Celtics is always a team traditionally that everybody got up for because of just the tradition that they provide in their history. But now people are really trying to get their names and own their bones with those guys. So you have to be ready. And I think they may be falling into that trap. But I think they definitely have what it takes to definitely get back to the finals.
You've seen Boston so far. You've also seen Cleveland, OKC, and New York. That might be the sampling of the best team so far in the NBA. So before we let you go, what team has impressed you the most courtside so far this season?
I really, OKC really, because I love Shea. I love that the togetherness of that team. And they're not at full strength, right? You're still losing one of you don't have one of your big guys. You don't have one of your best players in Chet Holmgren. But I also love Cleveland. Cleveland has, you know, they've been in the playoffs. They got the experience. They have young players. They have good guards. They have good shooting. They have depth. And they have a coach that has that experience. So they have the makeup as well. But I love what OKC and I love what Cleveland Cavaliers are doing. And there was, those are balanced teams. You know, they will shoot the three ball, but they have the ability to go inside. They have the ability to stretch you out. They have the ability to do so many things, and they're very versatile. So those are the two teams that I'm really interested in seeing, and I'm mostly intrigued by those two teams.
Maybe a potential matchup right there for the finals, Cleveland and OKC.
That regular season game was phenomenal when they played against each other not too long ago. So I would love to check that a seven-game series out with those two teams.
All right. We'll try to make it happen. Thanks so much, Alvin, for joining us before the game. I know you're FaceTiming us with your phone, so we appreciate you getting all that effort in.
I'm sure it's looking all messed up.
No, it's all good. You look great. Enjoy the game tonight and have a great call. Thanks so much. That's Alvin Williams of Sportsnet. We've got Raptors Celtics on Sportsnet 1 at 7:30 on After Us. That would be a dream for you, wouldn't it? Cleveland OKC final.
Yeah, those two teams, by the way, rematch tomorrow night in Oklahoma City. But Isaiah Hartenstein will be out. And my handicap last time we went head-to-head was that OKC had too little in the way of bigs to deal with Cleveland. Now they'll have zero bigs in the matchup against Cleveland. So it might be 2-0 Cavaliers if these two teams meet in the final. At least that part will factor in.
And we have that game on Sportsnet Plus tomorrow night.
Beautiful.
7:30. We will probably tee it up tomorrow. But good look ahead. Cancel your plans tomorrow night. Okay, best bets for tonight. I'm going to go with the
Can I just say, before you get there, I'm proud of you for this one.
Thank you. I'm inspired by Justin. And I had
to take some credit.
I think you will enjoy this very much, listeners. So Chris Boucher, I just told you all about his stretch of basketball, has been pretty unbelievable, whether he's in the lineup for 4 minutes, 10 minutes, 20 minutes. He's playing with something to prove, whether that's to other teams or to his own head coach. So I'm going to do a Chris Boucher ladder. It's very Justin Cuthbert of me. 10 points minus 125, but the plus money starts at 15 points, plus 300. For 15 points and 20 points, which he has hit just recently against Cleveland, is plus 950. So I think he can do it. And if it's a blowout game, which it could be, it was the other night when they lost by 54 points to the Celtics, guess who'll probably be playing? Chris Boucher. So there you go, folks.
You climb the ladder to reach the pot of gold. Also on the network tonight, Minnesota and Edmonton, a good Wednesday night matchup. On the network, the Wild are plus 185. They're going to be without Kaprizov still, and they're without
Faber. He's coming back soon, though.
But the goaltending matchup is Gustavsson versus Pickard, and I don't know. I think a goaltender who could be nominated for the Vezina might give them a little bit of an advantage in that regard, and the Wild present some value at plus 185, despite the Oilers playing really, really good hockey of late. Yes. But Minnesota's been playing really good hockey since the start of the season. So I think it's a little closer than that. I'll chase some plus money with the Wild tonight.
These two teams have basically the same record, 27-13-3 for the Oilers and 27-13-4 for the Minnesota Wild. So this is a big one tonight, two 27-win teams. We've got that on Sportsnet at 8:30. So we'll take a quick break. We'll come back, and Shana Goldman of The Athletic and the Too Many Men podcast will help us tee it up and go through a couple other important NHL updates, like Tristan Jarry being put through waivers, and a couple little tidbits on maybe Dubas's tenure with the Penguins so far. So we'll be right back on the Fan Pregame.
Hey, it's Nick Kiprios.
And I'm Justin Bourne.
We're diving deep into everything happening in Leafland and the biggest stories around the NHL.
Real Kipper and Bourne, weekdays from 4 to 6 on Sportsnet, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to The Fan Pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Another half an hour here before we send it to various places. Edmonton and Minnesota on Sportsnet for an 8:30 puck drop. But we got Boston Celtics in town to face the Raptors on Sportsnet 1 at 7:30. And then that's a doubleheader with Miami and the Lakers at 10 p.m. Still waiting for Jimmy Butler's landing destination.
We didn't really get to talk about that much, did we?
What do you think?
Do you have any? I just feel like it's almost impossible to pull off that trade.
Well, these aprons are really messing with my fantasy.
The second
GM.
Apron is
I don't really get
the worst of all aprons.
It's like, you know, the Michael Scott thing I've used before. Explain this to me like I'm fine.
Yeah.
You can't really just be like, he should go to the Warriors because there's all these rules.
No, it's red tape galore.
Basketball
used to be, or the NBA used to be so fun in that it seemed like anything was possible. Now it feels like nothing is possible in terms of moving big assets. But the most important thing is like, if Jimmy Butler was prime Jimmy Butler, or Jimmy Butler was like a better player than he is at this point in his career, maybe you move heaven and earth to make it happen. But it just doesn't feel like he's actually going to change the fortunes of the team that actually acquires him. Like the Thunder would be a perfect example. They're pretty desperate for a bench scorer, someone to like really drive the offense when Shea needs a blow. And a guy like Jimmy Butler in the old NBA, maybe that would work because they actually have some flexibility from a financial standpoint, but they're not bringing Jimmy Butler, and they're not going to mess up what they have cooking for Jimmy Butler, the guy who's causing just havoc in Miami. So I don't know how it's going to go, but I fear for the team that ends up doing it because it will be desperate.
Yeah, it will be desperate, but it'll be a fun story to track.
Sure.
Jimmy's coffee is a big, what is it, Big Head Coffee?
Yeah.
Yeah. It will make a move maybe somewhere.
That's my favorite Jimmy Butler thing right now. Not his basketball, his coffee.
His coffee, okay.
I like to try his coffee.
Well, it's expensive, apparently.
Is it?
Yeah, so win a couple bets.
Yeah, one-time thing.
All right, let's bring in Shayna Goldman of The Athletic and the Too Many Men podcast. Shayna, thanks so much for coming on. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
We love having you. We have lots to go through with you tonight. We'll start with Oilers in Minnesota because that's our big game on the network tonight, an 8:30 puck drop in Minnesota on Sportsnet. So let's start with the Oilers because they've just, like, they've had a little stretch here, 1-6-7. They're not yet at the Golden Knights level, but they might be making a push for it. What's kind of been the catalyst for them? I don't know if they turned the corner, but they've put some good hockey together consistently.
Yeah, I mean, we have the bar pretty high for Edmonton, right? You think about where they started the season, and it was a pretty poor start by their standards. And hey, we saw them turn around from a lot worse last year. So I think we all kind of knew the turnaround was coming. But it's a couple of things, right? You have Leon Draisaitl playing at an MVP level. He is playing his best hockey. You know, like he's doing what makes him shine on a daily basis, which is be a great goal scorer. But I think he's added to it a lot with some really clutch playmaking, and he's been really good defensively too. So the fact that he can drive his own line is a huge thing for the Oilers. It helps that their supporting cast is finally starting to step up. That was a big problem for them earlier in the season. Zach Hyman wasn't scoring at the rate I think we all anticipated. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins got off to a pretty terrible start. And now that they're clicking a little bit more and Draisaitl has better line mates, you have a good top six, which is the foundation for all of the Oilers' success. I think the other part of it is the uptick in their defensive game. They've been a lot better in their own zone so far this season, and it's translating to the penalty kill too. So we know the power play now is going. It wasn't, you know, they weren't scoring on it initially, but now that's back on track. So now that they're rounding out the other parts of their game, you know, they look like a real threat again.
You guys at The Athletic have been talking about the Hart Trophy lately, and Draisaitl is definitely among those who would be considered heavy favorites or the most likely to get it done. I kind of think it's simple. You outplay McDavid on that Oilers team this year, and Draisaitl's going to win it. Do you kind of see it like that?
Yeah, I won't be surprised if he wins it. I think that there's a couple trophies he could be eligible for this year because, you know, he's obviously leading the Rocket race. And if you don't believe you need to kill penalties for the Selke, I personally think you do, but I know some don't. You could have him in that conversation as well. But he, at this point in the season, definitely is a top three Hart Trophy candidate. But I do think that there is going to be a really good race here because I think we're seeing just how valuable Quinn Hughes is for the Canucks. We always knew he was, right? This is one of the best defensemen in the league, but he's showing that he is one of their most valuable players, period. And the difference in this team when he is or isn't on the ice or isn't in the game at all is absolutely massive. So I think those two are going to be leading the conversation. And, you know, I think it should be Connor Hellebuck with them, but we know goalies don't always get the hype that they deserve.
We literally just had this conversation a few days ago, and my like sneaky pick for the Hart was Quinn Hughes. I think it was like 39-1 in the betting odds. And I made the same arguments, and I was surprised to see that Connor Hellebuck was 4-1 because they have the same kind of case, right? They are the most valuable for their team and maybe being overlooked by some of the Oilers, I guess, because it is Connor McDavid still leading the way. But do you think there's a chance that we see a goaltender actually win a Hart? And like, this has got to be the year that it would happen, but I just don't know if it's, even a goaltender or a defenseman winning the Hart just seems so not like a practice that the voters participate in.
No, it really isn't. And I understand it to a point because it's hard enough to judge two forwards against each other, right? Like when we have a very specific criteria, it's a little bit easier when you're talking about, you know, the Selke Trophy or even defenseman to defenseman with the Norris Trophy. Even that we don't have a perfect method for. Now you want to throw in defensemen? That is a curveball that I think is really hard to navigate. And now you want to throw in goaltenders. The position that we understand the least, it really convolutes the entire thing. But it, you know, we should be having those conversations because a goalie is out there and can be the game breaker for their team. And you think a couple of years ago when it was Auston Matthews versus Igor Shesterkin, it was the prime opportunity for a goaltender to win it. Connor Hellebuck, year after year, is making the case as well. So I understand there might be some reservations about Hellebuck because of his, you know, playoff pedigree, but he's going to be the reason the Jets are, you know, as highly rated as they are in the Central Division. So he should be in there. I would think Quinn Hughes should be in there. I know that there's some steam gaining around Nathan MacKinnon, who is MVP caliber every day of the week. And we know that. But I think that MacKinnon and Makar are so closely ranked that we should be focusing on the other three a little bit more.
You're all on Quinn Hughes, eh? I might have to look into it a little bit more. We'll get back to the Oilers. Integration has been a bit of an issue this year. Jeff Skinner, excuse me, obviously on the outside looking in, but Vasily Podkolzin has been thriving. And you mentioned the importance potentially to Leon Draisaitl. Why has he been such a great fit?
You can see how much he works every single shift, right? Like that is a player. He is such an energy player. And I think he does the dirty work that you need on a line to click. When you're playing with Leon Draisaitl, you're never going to be the driver of that line. And that is just fine. Nobody's asking you to be. But you need to be a high-end facilitator. You need to be a high-end support player. It's why guys like Zach Hyman get so much hype, because you have to be able to not just be carried by that elite talent. You have to keep up with them, and you have to compliment them. And I think that he's doing that a lot. The finishing talent is the one drawback, and I think he's, you know, hitting his stride a little bit better this year than maybe he has in seasons past. But I just think he's, you know, putting in all of the work in every facet of the game that just agrees with Draisaitl. So he's able to be the best version of himself and be the star of that line.
All right, let's shift over to Minnesota, their opponents tonight. 6-3-0 since Kaprizov went down to injury. I feel like that's weathering the storm in a sense. I don't know if the expectations were to go, you know, higher or lower than that, right? But it's kind of in the middle. Two-part question. What's been able to keep them afloat? And second, can he still push for the heart, since we're talking about the heart?
I mean, I think so, right? It's not like the team is acing things without him, and we saw what a difference maker he was before he was hurt. I'm sure we're going to see that right when he returns, right? Like, he is one of the most electric players in the game. He's exactly what this team needs. I think that they're getting help in a couple areas. It's tough, too, because their blue line has dealt with so many injuries throughout the season, and every time you think, okay, maybe it's going to get better, it's somebody else is missing time. They've lost Faber for stretches. Brodin, Spurgeon has missed a lot of time. And there was, you know, a moment there in the early goings of the season, that top four looked outstanding. It was the defensive structure we know Minnesota to have. I think goaltending has helped out. I know Gustafsson hasn't been perfect, neither has Fleury, but I think the fact that Gustafsson has found his game again is really helpful for Minnesota. But to me, the star player over this whole stretch is Marco Rossi, who I think everybody's waiting to see him have his moment, right? And then you expect him to have his moment with Kaprizov, because then he can be the passenger and just be supported by a play driver on his wing. But I think that he's picking up the pace and showing what a game changer he can be in his own right, that it's just going to help the Wild moving forward, because their center depth has always been such a weakness.
There's a big four in the Central Division with the Jets, Wild, Stars, and Avalanche. That's a difficult part of the bracket to get through. Where do the Wild belong in that? They're second right now to the Jets, but are they better than Dallas? Are they better than the Colorado Avalanche?
Honestly, no. I think this start has been really encouraging for them, because I don't know if they were exactly anticipated to be here. You know, they definitely have a lot of work to do to bolster their depth and get some more high-end scoring in the bottom six. So, you know, players like Boldy and Kaprizov have that support. We know they're a great defensive team. That should put their goalies in a position to succeed. But I think you need to have a little bit more pop, you know, when Kaprizov's on the bench, to keep everything afloat and compete with some of the best in the Central Division. The Avs, to me, are one of the most dangerous teams in the league, especially now that they shored up their goaltending. You know, the Jets have their best weapon. That's Connor Hellebuck, and there's some really great players. Josh Morrissey's having a Norris-caliber season as well. So I like both of them. And the Stars are a tricky one because they definitely have had some scoring issues this year. The top six hasn't been super consistent. And then the second line, which was making up for the first line, you're missing Tyler Seguin, you're missing Mason Marchment. Like, that really hurts them. But the fact that players like Jimmy Benn are stepping up and Wyatt Johnson's, you know, hitting his stride, I like their depth and their completeness. And I think that they've been really smart with their deadline moves over the last couple seasons that I have a little bit more faith in what they're going to do down the stretch.
All four of these teams have their disadvantages, things they're dealing with. Well, maybe not the Dallas Stars. They're pretty set. But, you know, Colorado has some money they're leaving on the table. Minnesota is always dealing, or the Winnipeg Jets, rather, always dealing with the fact that they're the Winnipeg Jets, and they kind of have to keep their own, and they don't want to necessarily move on from their draft picks because they know they need to use them. But the Wild have the Parise and Suter money still costing them, and they still are this competitive, but they come off the books this summer. Are you dreaming on what Bill Guerin might be able to accomplish once that money is finally available to him?
I'm dreaming on what most teams would be able to do in that position, but Bill Guerin has to kind of prove it to me because I don't love some of his spending decisions over the years. And I think you could even look at some of the contracts he signed, you know, the Foligno deal and the Hartman deal. Are they backbreakers? No, but I feel like he's sometimes invested in players that are kind of like-minded of what he already has instead of looking for what's different. And that's what makes Boldy and Kaprizov so special there. Obviously, a big chunk of it will more than likely be offered to Kaprizov when his contract's up. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's a real opportunity, especially if this year doesn't look like the year, to not overspend at the deadline, to keep replenishing their assets and be ready to use that cap space when it becomes available, to better themselves for next season and beyond. There's a way to do it. Can they do it? I'd love to see it.
We're talking to Shayna Goldman of The Athletic and Too Many Men podcast. Okay, let's shift to a couple headline-y items, including what's going on in Pittsburgh. Tristan Jarry, a wave today after, you know, what has been a pretty terrible season. I don't know how else to sugarcoat that. He allowed a goal within the first five shots in 17 starts this season. I don't know what's next for him, if he can go and like rehabilitate his image and his play, or if somebody claims him, but it's got a hefty number. It just is one piece of the offseason moves that Kyle Dubas has done that have not panned out. But we'll just look at Jarry first. Like, what is next for him in his hockey journey?
I have a hard time thinking anybody's going to pick him off waivers. That feels like a contract that the Penguins are going to have to sell someone else on taking, unless there's a team that feels that they need to hit the cap floor and they could just use that for, you know, who cares what happens in net because these next couple seasons don't matter. And there are teams that might be in that position. I just don't know if I would be jumping at that. I would want to, you know, leverage cap space to make the Penguins pay up for it, right? Like, that is the name of the game. If you have space, even if you need to hit the cap floor, like, you should be doing everything you can to, you know, get something back in return if you're going to take on a player like that. I don't know if he can, you know, rehabilitate his game because, you know, he had a time in the AHL already. And it seemed like he got back on track. Mm-hmm. And they brought him up and things were starting to look up, I guess, relative to where they were for Pittsburgh. But it all came apart again. You know, it's just, it's a really tough situation. And his game has just been inconsistent because in most seasons, it's not like he's some terrible goalie, mm-hmm. you know, before this year. It's just that he's inconsistent, the injuries, and he doesn't come to play in the big moments. But now you have this as well. Like, his stock is as low as it can be.
Where's Kyle Dubas' stock for you?
It's definitely not as high as it was when he went into Pittsburgh. But I also think that that team, I have questions, you know, for ownership then why they didn't make a management change sooner, because I think that they let them run out that last deadline and put the Penguins in such a bad position that they had to do damage control before they could start building. But, you know, you commit to these three core players and I understand why, right? Like, what they mean to the city, what they mean to the organization, but it hamstrings them a bit. And you look at where they are now, this is not going to be an easy path to navigate. Some of the smarter teams in the league, like the Washington Capitals, they knew when to take a step back in 2023 and knew that their aging core didn't have it at that time, right? It was an injury-riddled season. They were still in a playoff position. They took themselves outright out of it. You look at how they've repositioned themselves over the last year and a half, and I don't think you necessarily need to take as long as the Capitals did. I think you can have an active deadline and then offseason to try to spring back into the next year. But the Penguins need to start doing that sooner than later. They just don't have a ton of valuable assets to make it happen. That's going to make it all the more challenging. So while I like some of the bets he's taking on players like Tomasino, it just feels like they don't have options, and this probably should have happened sooner. Like, this should have started maybe last season.
Yeah, it should have probably started a little.
The Tomasinos of the world, kind of Kyle Dubas, especially
loves a Tomasino.
Not quite.
He does love a Tomasino type. Time for one more with you, Shayna. So let's go Leafs because I mean we're on the Dubas and Leafs of it all.
Things are getting a little louder.
Things
here.
Are noisy in Toronto, but our Scepters won last night, so we're back at the bottom of the standings. Nonetheless, Leafs on a 3-game losing streak here. A little bit of noise, a little bit of tension, maybe in terms of discussing it if you're a player. But is there something glaring to you besides the power play that is going wrong with this Leafs team that could be an easy fix or is a trade deadline fix? Because right now we're kind of clouded in what's going on with this team.
Yeah, I look at the Leafs and I just think that they have so much high-end offensive skill. And that's a great starting point, but I wish that they would have a little bit more secondary scoring. You need to have reliable scorers throughout your lineup. It is still a four-line game, and we've seen the best contenders have at least three lines that they can put out and trust to score. And I don't think we're seeing that enough for Toronto. There was such an emphasis on getting stronger and tougher and more defensive. And that all has value, right? Like, I'm not even trying to knock it at this point like I felt like I was in the offseason, questioning their moves and, you know, some of management's decisions. But now you already did that. It's done. So how do you find a way to complement that the rest of the roster? And obviously it's tough because John Tavares, you know, he got hurt in practice and you've had to deal with the Austin Matthews injury if you're management. So you have other things to navigate and maybe a third line score isn't on your radar. But I would want more help down the middle. I would want a little more lineup versatility as well. So you have more options to be shifting players from center to wing and just get different looks on each line so you're not so stringent in certain pairings.
Who's harder to fix, them or the Scepters?
Scepters at least are going to have Natalie Spooner.
That's what they need.
So.
Just get her back, right?
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. They are doing everything right. They just don't have that finishing talent without her. And, you know, I think even if she doesn't play up to last year's levels, she's the difference maker they're really missing.
They definitely need her. And they need goal review on overtime winners, right?
And offside plays. Like, we're getting bold with so many rule changes. But
come
like,
on, Shayna. We need to make some meaningful change, okay?
Yeah.
That's our goal. All right. We kept you too long. We appreciate you coming on, as always. Great to chat, and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks for having me.
That's Shayna Goldman of The Athletic and the Too Many Men podcast. All right. John Tavares looked like he tweaked something in the lower body area during a power play.
Who says
drill.
You're supposed to practice more?
Like, and it had to be power play. They couldn't have been doing.
That's what Dave Cameron was doing.
Yeah. Ooh.
Preventing injury.
Bad vibes. But yeah, like we don't know obviously the extent of it. There is a video, it's on Sportsnet. You can take a look. It looks like him and Chris Tanev are kind of going opposite directions in a little, not a slew foot on purpose, but the feet get tangled, folks.
Accidental slew.
That's called a slew foot. An accidental slew. It happens to the best of us. So we don't know the situation. He did leave practice. So that would just be the cherry on top.
Yeah. And it kind of compounds what I think, what is the existing issue, which is when the Maple Leafs look like they did last night, boot off the ice and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. It just takes one, because they are so top heavy and they are still the same team that relies on four guys and has nothing else really following it up, is that if one guy's not going, it can look so, so ugly because it puts so much stress on one line. That line's run into a brick wall because, of course, they're line matching on the other side, and then just absolutely nothing happens from shift to shift. It is so obvious that they need to be a deeper team from an offensive standpoint. But I don't think you can fix that ahead of the deadline. And it's got me kind of rethinking maybe the priorities over the next couple weeks here.
Oh, to what?
I don't know. Maybe keep the powder dry.
Oh, you're down on the Leafs.
I'm just down on the prospects of going on a run, per se.
Wow.
I know. It doesn't
And Justin says, don't bother doing any
I just
trades.
Don't think Easton Cowan or Fraser Minton and continuing to work away at that depth is worth a rental. If it's the right addition that could stick around for a while, sure. But I don't know. They don't have much to give up.
Well, you know, William Nylander today said, it's only been 3 games. What's the big deal, really?
That's classic Willie.
It is. You know what?
And I appreciate that, to be honest.
Like, I just love that that's who he is. He ain't going to change for no one. Not us. Not for anyone on Twitter.
Not Greg Berube.
That was mad at him. All right. Busy night on the network, Edmonton and Minnesota. We just teed that up with Shayna. That's going to be a great game tonight on Sportsnet at 8:30. Two teams with 27 wins. Then you got Boston and Toronto. NBA action on Sportsnet 1, a 7:30 tip there. We talked to Alvin Williams about it. We'll see if it's either a 54-point blowout or maybe a buzzer beater in overtime. Because that's the last two times they played.
20 points from Chris Boucher and we'll be satisfied.
I will be very happy. Well, that was it. That was the Fan Pregame brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. Have a great night, everyone, and we'll see you tomorrow for Baby Friday. And Bunker's birthday, by the way, tomorrow. Ooh. Big day.